Good morning, everybody. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF. Kyle High in studio with you. It is 7:40 and it is Wednesday. That means it is time for Green Side Up. We have in studio today, we have Jacob Weber and Wendy Powell. Guys, good morning. How are you doing?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, a lot of things going on, but it is that time of year. It is now Christmas time, Jacob. So we want to talk about a little bit of maybe Christmas tree care.
Christmas tree care, that's right. Quite a few folks still use fresh-cut Christmas trees. And there's something about a living tree. Quote, I call them living trees because they're still alive, but they're in a process of dying because they've been cut from their roots. But what we want to do with those living Christmas trees is keep them from dying so fast because we're using them indoors. They're going to be losing moisture faster than they would be outdoors in a shaded location and cooler temperatures. So we want to replenish the lost moisture in those trees, and we can do that fairly easy if we can get the water to start moving up those vessels, in the evergreen tree, it's called a trachea. It's not a vessel. Vessels are in the angiosperms, but the water can move up those little tubes inside the tree wood because there are non-living tubes, but they're designed to transport that water. And what we can do to get it started is to cut a slice of wood about an inch or so off the bottom of the stump of the tree. That exposes fresh wood, and then immediately immerse it in water. And then keep an eye on it, because we'll put water in maybe the Christmas tree stand up to a certain level, and we check it each day, make sure that water is being deplenished in, I guess that's the right word, removed.
Yeah, exactly. Exhausted. It's drinking the water, basically.
Make sure that tree is drinking that water, so we know that it's going up inside the tree and keeping all the needles fresh and keep them in a fresh state, which is very important because that extends the life of the tree, make the useful life of the tree. This doesn't last forever. Eventually, we get a little crud, I guess that's the correct word, growing on the bottom of the stump, and it can plug those tubes. And so we probably want to try to keep that water as fresh as possible and maybe keep know that eventually that's going to get plugged up, but we want that to happen after the big day.
Right. You don't want it to be before. Then you're like, oh, boy, yeah. I got a dead tree here.
Well, we got a tree that's having a problem.
Yeah,
it's not
exactly.
Taking up water, and we want water to get going up in it. The only way to do that is to remove the tree from the stand, cut off another slice of wood, and put it back in, and hopefully that continues to work.
And you're going to need about probably like five people to make sure that happens, make sure everything's not falling off the tree at the same time.
But
so
see, we don't want to do that. We want to make sure. So use fresh water. Do not put sugar in the water thinking that that's going to keep, you know, provide energy for the tree. What that does is that provides lots of energy for slime to grow, and that's no good. Fresh water is the only thing we could put in there. There are maybe some algaecides that may be available that you can mix with the water that doesn't harm the tree, but the best thing is just fresh water. And if the water starts to get a little bit messy from needles falling in, it'd probably a good idea to remove the water and replace it with good clean water. That's the best. And just keep an eye on the tree. That's the best way of doing it. Initially, select a good tree. Select a good quality tree. And what we want to do is look for signs of freshness. Signs of freshness are always going to be needles that are resilient, flexible, not dry and crack when you bend them, and that they stay pretty much on the tree. When you shake the tree real good, you'll have some needles fall off. There's some dead needles that are in the tree. That's okay. But if you bump the tree and you have excessive numbers of needles falling off, okay, that tree has been, it started to dry out, and it probably will not take up water from that point, and it'll be a poor quality tree. So look for signs of freshness. Certain species are better at staying fresh longer. Pines are generally pretty good. Firs, spruce come down behind that. The worst tree ever is the cedar tree. That thing, it seems like it will not take up water even when you cut it freshened out in the pasture. So if you're going to be using a cedar tree for a Christmas decoration, which there are some really pretty ones, maybe want to delay the harvest of that tree until maybe a week before Christmas. And that way there's less of a chance of that tree drying out. So that's it should last throughout the holiday seasons, or a holiday between Christmas and New Year's, when you want to have the house decorated. If you're really in the old-fashioned tradition, your Christmas tree is put up Christmas Eve, because you're in a period of what's called Advent, which is kind of like a mini Lent, mm-hmm. where you are subdued, and then the Christmas day is the day of celebration. If you want to follow that tradition, it would. But the tradition now is before Thanksgiving, actually right after Halloween, is Christmas lights go up and everybody's happy. And then the day after Christmas, it's done.
Everybody gets excited about Christmas. There was a station in Oklahoma City I've been saying the past couple of weeks, they started playing Christmas music the day after Halloween.
Yeah,
and it's just like that was kind of early.
We enjoy the season, and I like to extend it to past New Year's, where we get into the traditional religious holidays, Epiphany. So that's the Christmas season for me. But everybody does their own. With Christmas trees, we want to make sure that we don't ignite the house.
Right.
And essentially, we just don't want a fire started in the house. There's potential for fire, not so much from the tree, but the fact that we got a lot of paper around that tree. And during the season, there's also candles that are lit. So let's keep the potential source of ignition away from that paper and away from that tree. And be careful when you do unwrap gifts. Remove the paper right away and get it out of the house,
right?
Period. And
get it in the trash bag immediately, and as soon as we're done opening gifts, get it out of the house. Put it in the trash can outside.
We used to get real excited about Christmas lights years ago. When you had Christmas lights, they were different. They were incandescent, and some of them put off a lot of heat, and they had potential for starting fires. Nowadays, LED lights, we don't even have to worry about them. The only particular concern we would have about any of those lights is make sure that the wire is properly, you know, coated with the insulation.
There's sure
no cracks or breaks. And always select UL-listed electrical devices. Those are rated as to safety. Those are some of the things just to keep an eye on.
Yeah, you don't want to do like in Christmas Vacation, where he had that one outlet overloaded with all the different things.
Oh, that's a funny show. Yeah, perfect district for the, you know, the traditional
traditional
family trying to have a great Christmas, and it just never works out.
No, it doesn't.
It's always funny because we sure enjoy laughing at and that type of humor.
Absolutely. It's funny. I watched that the other night. It's one of my favorite Christmas movies. Wendy, coming over to you, you wanted to talk about the Farm Financial series.
Yes. So our deadline for that is approaching at the end of the month, and with the holidays, that will be here soon. So I wanted to remind folks that registration is open. So with the high cost of inputs these days on farming and ranching operations and low commodity prices, we think it's a good time to be presenting some farm financial skills. And this program is geared towards farm women, those folks that might be doing the books at home, doing more of the record keeping and things like that. The series that will take place every Wednesday for 4 weeks, starting in mid-January, is going to happen at a location in Sycamore, the Sycamore Township Hall, also at the Parsons Research Station, and at Hepler, which is up in Crawford County. So anybody that wants to sign up for this program, registration is open. It's $40, and that's going to cover the cost of a meal each night. And you're going to get a notebook as well as a book, as well as gaining lots of skills like balancing cash flow sheets and balancing all of the fun farm financial papers that come with an operation that's going to be profitable. And we're also going to be discussing some alternatives. So if you've got some problems with your operation and you're looking to make some changes, this would be a good place to gain some ideas and also network with other ladies around the area. And we're also going to be video conferencing with a couple of experts in the field on campus at K-State campus. And so we'll be bringing those experts into the room each night, and then we'll have local activities and good discussion as well as a meal. So it'll be a really great opportunity for folks to dive in and focus on that area for a few hours each week and see what they've got going on compared to other folks in that same situation.
So it looks like, and again, when is that begin?
January 12th is the first session, and that'll happen every Wednesday for 4 weeks. And we do have a snow date or a bad weather date. The fifth option will be February 12th, I believe. So go ahead and sign up for that. The link is on our Facebook page, Wildcat Extension District. It's on our website, Wildcat Extension District. You can call any of the extension offices. The Altamont office is 620-784-5337. And you can, like I said, you can call any of the offices or catch any of the agents to get signed up for that.
And absolutely, you want to be sure you want to get signed up quickly for that, because I'm pretty sure seats will fill up quickly.
Yes. So a couple of other notes: if the $40 registration fee is a deterrent for you, we do have some scholarships available. Community National Bank has generously offered to provide scholarships, 2 scholarships per location. So if you're interested in the program, that registration fee is going to be out of your budget, then just give us a holler and we'll see what we can do to work it out, because we do want folks to attend this meeting. It's going to be really helpful to those in that industry.
Absolutely. So be sure to give a call or go to the website. What is the website's website address?
Our Facebook page is Wildcat Extension. And our website is Wildcat Extension. If you Google it, it'll go right there. It's the first one that pops up.
Just Google Wildcat Extension. You should be able to find it pretty easily. So go that way to sign up for the Farm Financial Series coming up here in January. Okay, we're going to go ahead and take a break. But when we come back, we'll have more with Jacob and Wendy. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF District Office. And we will get it started back up. And we'll start with you, Wendy. There was one thing, another thing you were wanting to talk about: replacement females.
Yes. So this is the time of year that a lot of producers are looking to call some females. I talked about that last time I was in. And we need to make for sure that we're replacing those animals. And some producers are wanting to keep their own livestock and put their females back into their operation. Or the question becomes, you know, do I outsource that? So there's a couple of ways you can figure that. One of the biggest factors is what the focus is of the operation. If an operation's focused on terminal traits are going to be like high marbling scores, large ribeye areas, heavy carcasses, those end of the line traits that animals are looking to produce, because that's what we're actually in the market for, is to produce meat. If you're in an operation that's focused on those terminal traits, then you probably ought to outsource your replacement females, simply because whenever you're making your breeding selections, you're looking for growth and not necessarily for calving ease. If you're in an operation where you're producing seed stock for other producers, that might be an opportunity for you to look at keeping your own replacement females. So when you're doing that, you certainly want to keep the oldest females of the calving season. Pick females out of your favorite cows or sheep or goats or whatever it is that you have going on there. The reason you want to choose animals from your favorite females is because those females fit with your management style for some reason. Those have thrived under your operation, and so you want to make for sure that those specific traits are being passed down, and those replacement females will carry on that longevity for you. So a couple of ways you can, if you've got a large group of females that could be potential replacement heifers or ewes or does for you, go ahead and just keep several would be one strategy, and then do some light growing and expose them to a breeding opportunity. And then those that conceive early are the ones that you want to keep. And then you have an opportunity for some feeder livestock to generate some revenue at that point. The other strategy that you can take a look at is really honing down the ones that you want to keep or that you think you might be keeping, and go ahead and heavy feed them so you bring them into an early puberty and they'll conceive earlier. And then you'll just continue that feeding operation through their next calving or lambing or their next cycle there. So a couple of different ways you can take a look at that, but you certainly want to be mindful of the end goal first.
All right. Well, Wendy, that's good information there for you, for everybody out there. So if they have any further questions for you in particular about this, how can they contact you?
Sure. You can call me at the Altamont office, 620-784-5337. You can catch me there. Or really, my email address is a great way to get a hold of me, too. Wendy, W-E-N-D-I-E, Powell, P-O-W-E-L-L, Wendy Powell, no spaces, at ksu.edu.
So yeah, be sure IE, not Y. So because otherwise, yes, Somebody will get an email like who? or it'll get kicked back either way. But be sure to call her or send her an email if you have any questions. If you would like to give us a call today, you during Green Side Up, our numbers are 251-6909, 1-800-252-5443, 1-800-252-KGGF. If you have any questions for Jacob or Wendy. Jacob, the other thing you want to talk about today, we'll keep it on the Christmas, Christmassy type topic. You want to talk about mistletoe.
Mistletoe. During the break, Wendy and I were sitting out in the lobby, and I pointed out hackberry tree across the street has mistletoe growing in it. And we were kind of not talking. And Wendy said, yeah, well, you ought to talk about that. Mistletoe is used in traditional holiday decorating. There are some aspects about the plant that are used in certain romantic situations, I guess, or it's attributed to that. Supposedly, it encourages kissing. But mistletoe is also, because it's evergreen, and because in some situations the attractive fruit, which is white, can also add to the holiday ambience. That's a big fancy word. I'm trying to pick it up and learn how to use it in my language. Ambiance. Yeah.
That's a good word.
Yeah,
though.
I had to mispronounce it even. But it's very attractive. Mistletoe is a parasitic plant. Parasitic or semi-parasitic, we have to say, because it's not fully parasitic. We do have other parasitic plants around. Well, the number one is dodder, but it has no chlorophyll in the plant, so it's fully reliant on its host plant. Well, mistletoe is fully reliant on the host plant too, but mainly for water and minerals. It doesn't really rob the tree of too much energy. because it does have green leaves. It does produce its own food. But mistletoe can be damaging to trees if there's an overwhelming number of plants on the tree. The plant itself has Hostoria. That's the name of it. The little stuff growing in through the wood fibers and taking water from the tree itself. Getting it out of the tree is one of the issues because oftentimes it's fairly high up in the trees. Pole pruners work fairly well. Maybe a very sturdy stepladder, very tall stepladder, and a pole pruner will get you up closer to where the mistletoe is. Years ago, the tradition was to go out hunting mistletoe with a shotgun. Wendy said that was it your dad that did that?
It was my granddad and my dad, yeah.
They go out and shoot the mistletoe out of the tree.
I guess that's one way to get it, so.
Yeah, well, I don't think that's going to be a very safe way of doing this, and definitely not allowed within the city limits, that's for sure. There's quite a few trees around that have mistletoe here in the Coffeyville area, a lot of trees. Mistletoe is very noticeable after the leaves fall off the deciduous trees. Mistletoe can specifically be found on certain oak species, generally in a white oak group, but also I've seen it in a red oak group as well, elm trees and hackberry trees. You don't find it in too many other species of trees because there's kind of a symbiotic relationship between those two species with mistletoe itself. So gathering it, do it safely. Do get permission. If you're going on somebody else's property, get permission to get it. You can find it if you want to go on the hunt for it. There are many ways of using it in holiday decorating. Beyond that, I guess, good luck.
Everybody likes to hang it over the doorway for for a little smoochy. So we do have a call, so let's go ahead and get to the phone lines. And caller, you are on Green Side Up. How are you doing this morning?
Oh, pretty good. Headed to work. Hey, the best way to take that mistletoe down with a piece of 20-foot PVC pipe, tape you some kind of metal hook on it, just reach up and jerk it down that way.
Hey, that works. Yeah.
I got a question for Jacob. When's the best time to transplant roses, Sharon, trees?
When they're generally dormant.
And when, so right now?
Well, you can if you want to, or you can wait till the day after Valentine's Day if you want to get a little break here. And, you know, the better time is to transplant while they're still dormant, but when they were shortly becoming out of dormancy.
And what about crepe myrtles?
The same applies. Crepe myrtle comes out of dormancy a little bit later than roses Sharon. The other thing is a good quality spade, nice and sharp, and a good strong back.
No, I got a good quality. I don't use a spade. I'm sorry, I use an excavator.
Oh, you cheat.
I cheat.
You need to do it the old-fashioned way, to be traditional.
My back won't take it, but that machine will dig it out. How big a root ball should I leave?
Well, if you do it during dormancy, you don't have to worry too much about the root ball, the root, the soil being attached to the roots. The main thing is getting a sufficient quantity of roots, good quality roots that are not damaged as okay. In the move. Now, if you can take a root ball with it, that's better. As long as you're doing it when the plant's dormant, it's a lot easier on the plant itself.
I was going to put some fertilizer in, what do I need to put it in?
You mean put fertilizer in the planting hole?
Yeah.
That's the number one big mistake that people make. No fertilizer in the planting hole, period. Fertilizer can take the moisture out of the roots. It can damage really tender roots. And what you're trying to do is encourage root growth. A better way to do it is get the plant started to leaf out, start to produce new roots, and then use water-soluble fertilizer according to label directions and water the tree once about every 2 or 3 weeks initially with that fertilizer in a weak solution. And
okay.
That will give you the... Yeah. Another thing
One last question. When do you dig up iris bulbs?
You can dig them up now if you wish and transplant them.
Okay.
Do it again the day after Valentine's Day if you wish. Between Valentine's Day and the Ides of March, the 1st of March.
Okay. Well, thank you. You've been very helpful. Maybe now I can transplant some roses, Sharon trees, and have them grow.
The earlier you plant to transplant in the fall, the more difficult it becomes for survival. If you delay transplanting until late dormancy, it's a lot easier on the plant.
So, I will. I'll wait till day after Valentine's Day. Then.
There you go.
Thank you, and I appreciate it. Maybe I can have some Rose of Sharon with flowers on this year.
Good luck.
Okay, thank you.
All right, caller, thank you very much for calling in today, asking a lot of questions there, and that's some good stuff there. Guys, that's going to be it for us for the show today, and I appreciate you coming in, Jacob and Wendy, to talk about all the things that that I don't know about it, so I learn something every week, so it's very cool for you guys to come in, and I appreciate you coming in today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, when we come back, we'll have Open Line. You are listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF.